Welcome to Seeking Alpha's Wall Street Breakfast, your daily source of market news and analysis. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher.
Welcome to Alpha Talks Editor's Roundtable, What Moved the Markets This Week for June 26th, the week ending June 26th. It was a relatively quiet week, as least compared to previous weeks that we've covered. The big news appears to have been on the COVID front once again. Cases in the southeastern U.S. and some other places out west have increased. And the markets apparently were concerned about that. And there was a big sell-off on Tuesday, I believe. Today, as we record this on Friday, stocks are down as well. I am joined once again by my brain trust of Seeking Alpha editors, Bradley Olison, VP of News, Aaron Task, VP contributor of content, and Stephen Alpher, managing editor of Breaking News. I'm Nathaniel Baker, host of this podcast and contributing editor at Seeking Alpha. Let's start off with Aaron, as we always do. Aaron, what's your take on the events of the week?
Well, it's interesting, you know, you said it was a quiet week, and again, everything's relative, but there was a tremendous amount of economic news out, and as you mentioned, the COVID news, and I think that's the thing that's really gotten people's attention. Obviously, as of yesterday, we have a new record high number of cases in this country, and the seven-day moving average is very high. So, you know, you had the huge sell-off in March, and you had the huge rebound in April, May, and the first part of June, and it looks like the highs on June 8th at around 3,200 for the S&P 500 are the highs for now. The market has held the 3,000 level on the other side, so that seems to be the new trading range, and I would think the next couple of weeks, the news flow will determine whether we break out to the upside or down below, or continue to chop around here. Stephen and I talked about this a little bit on Alpha Trader, our podcast. You know, I think some sideways action would be the healthiest thing for the market, let people digest. But 2020 is not that kind of year, so I wouldn't bet on that. But, you know, the rally, the rebound was based on the idea that this would be temporary. We'd have a V-shaped recovery. Some of the economic data suggests a V, but if Texas and California, just those two states, if they're going back into lockdown, that's a huge part of the U.S. economy right there. So obviously that's the big risk, I think, right now that investors are looking at.
Yeah, Bradley, you cover this pretty closely, and you're very much in the weeds with the stocks that are moving on a daily basis. What's your take on this week?
So, I mean, there are a lot of cross currents. I mean, I don't know if we really want to get into some of the quarter end selling that we might be able to be witnessing here, because that's a huge factor that we need to take into consideration. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's COVID related. There's a huge amount of worrying COVID numbers out there. As Aaron mentioned, we're now at our highest daily rate, even exceeding when the Northeast was going through its you know, trying times. Some of the biggest winners and losers, obviously, this week are the COVID-related names that we saw. It almost has echoes of the trade war narrative. Every time, you know, the trade war was on, trade war was off, we'd get heavy selling in some of the semi-cap names and some of the, multinationals. Now we're seeing that same narrative play out with COVID. You know, cruise lines, Norwegian Cruise Lines, American Airlines, Royal Caribbean. We've been seeing some retailers, Nordstrom, et cetera. Those are the big losers. Those are all the names that suffered the most in March during those biggest sell-offs. And some of the gainers, we're definitely seeing, you know, investors moving back into Clorox, for example. McCormick, that's the spice food, cooking at home. That's the theme there. And some of the dollar stores, as people kind of stock up for the long haul to stay at home. So that's some of the top end themes that I've been witnessing. That big sell off on Wednesday, Gilead was one of the biggest movers in the S&P, and that's one of the major names that everyone's been looking at in terms of finding that cure or treatment for COVID. So definitely a COVID week, but you can't ignore some of the quarter end selling. JP Morgan estimated about $70 billion in negative equity rebalancing by mutual funds. You had about another negative $65 billion from defined benefits, and they basically estimate about $170 billion going into the quarter end in terms of some of the rebalancing. Some of that, obviously, may have been done already, but that's obviously a negative cross current in addition to these worrying COVID headlines.
Yeah, and the prepper trade that we've talked about a little bit here lives on. Winnebago and Dick's Sporting Goods surprised to the upside. On that note, Stephen, what do we see in the corporate news arena? What has caught your attention this week?
I think the Fed stress test, which came out last night. I don't think there are any major surprises in the fact that the Fed banned any stock buybacks or dividend hikes through the at least the end of Q3. I don't think any banks were planning on doing either anyway. But what was kind of surprising is dividends going forward are going to be based on kind of a 1 year rolling average of what earnings are. So for the first time, I think the likelihood maybe of some dividend cuts from some of the big banks is in the forefront, and the banks are getting hammered today. I don't know whether it's because of the stress tests or just worried about another downturn in the economy. And another interesting point from the stress test was one of the Fed governors, Lael Brainard, dissented from that action. She thought that dividends should be halted altogether until we're past all this. And Brainard's a former high-ranking Treasury official, I think, under Obama, and probably on the short list to be Treasury Secretary if Biden gets elected.
Yeah, and the other thing I'd note, Stephen, I'm glad you brought up the financials, is that just yesterday, the OCC came out and gave the banks some relief on the Volcker Rule and the amount of money they have to set aside for derivatives trades if they're trading within their own corporate entities. So it's a little bit of the regulators giving and then the regulators taking away on the stress test. But yeah, that action in the banks today is got to be a worrying sign, because the banks have lagged the overall market during the recovery. Obviously, the low and zero rates are putting pressure on net interest margins for them. But there's, you know, I think there's definitely a sense out there among certainly people who remember the financial crisis that if the banks can't get going, it's going to be hard for the overall market or people to have faith that the overall market's going to keep in rally mode.
Yeah, as we look here, the JP Morgan down 5% today. It's been down lower even, back in May, it was below 90, and Goldman Sachs is also down to the tune of 7%. Those are the two big ones.
One of the better quotes I saw was that the Fed gave the banks a pat on the head and a kick in the teeth, which I thought was a great summary of exactly what went down. And I mean, the Goldman being weak, I think that's not a surprise. Morgan Stanley was out with a note, I think, earlier on Friday, just describing that Wells Fargo, Goldman, and Capital One are some of the biggest at-risk names to cut their dividends. Citizens Financial, Huntington Bank shares also in that same group. Mm-hmm. So no surprise on the weakness there, but you know, I guess you could always say it could be worse, right?
Yeah, and Bank of America, the other big one, down 5% also. Mm-hmm. It looks like, though, a lot of this, there is something to be made for this range-bound trading action now, especially as we enter the summer months. I heard a little bit of that this week, to Aaron's point earlier. I mean, this sell-off it's not terrible. It's a couple percent on the Dow. It looks like 1% on the S&P. But, I don't know, almost 2% on the S&P actually today. So that is, it's not nothing, but it doesn't look like fear has gripped everybody, at least as we sit here.
Well, its fear is going to be, limited to each sector, right? I think when, you still have some of these mega cap tech names at their highest levels ever. So it's clearly not a massive risk off move at this point. Wednesday we had the big five push higher. I think Alphabet's the only one in that category that has not hit an all-time high post-COVID. Facebook's up 19%. Microsoft's up 29%. This is as of, the Tuesday close.
That's year to date.
Year to date, yeah. Amazon's up 50%.
Amazing.
So, I mean, it's a far cry from, blood in the streets here.
Yeah. But go ahead, Stephen.
There's kind of this thought that the market's basically been straight up since the bottom in March. And I was just looking at the charts. We actually had a fairly sizable sell-off and sideways move in the first 2 weeks of May. And, right now we're in a kind of a similar period, maybe in the last 10 days to what we saw in the first 2 weeks of May. So, whether it continues or whether it's just kind of a necessary pause, like Aaron talked about, is to be seen.
I was going to add, I think we're in this environment where the conventional wisdom is the Fed has your back and you want to buy the dips, right? But the fundamentals aren't particularly good outside of the stay-at-home type stocks and the mega cap stocks. You know, again, the valuation's got to be a concern at some point. But the market could stay irrational longer than you can stay solvent, as the old saying goes. The other thing that I noted this week, junk bond issuance, so far in June, and we still have a couple of days left, has already exceeded the prior monthly all-time high, which was set in September 2013, right? Wow. So companies, and there was another quote, I'm glad Brad mentioned the kick in the teeth quote. The quote that caught my eye this week was from Bill Zox. He's a junk bond manager at Diamond Hill Capital. He said, quote, "You get an invitation to a party from the Fed, Treasury, and Congress. They offer to pick you up, take you home, and bring you breakfast in bed the next morning. You know it's going to be a party like no other," end quote. And, again, that's what's going on in the high yield market. And on the next episode of Alpha Trader, we talk a bit about this with Danielle DiMartino Booth, who's a former Fed official, now at Quill Intelligence. So you have this very much bifurcated market where the Fed is saying, we got your back, bring it in here. And if you're an investor, if you're a speculator, it's hard, you can't ignore that, right? But on the flip side, you also have record levels of bankruptcies. The foreclosure levels are starting to pile up. Like once the banks are able to start foreclosing on homes again, this is something that DiMartino Booth was making a big point about. Like the housing market is maybe temporarily being boosted by this. There's still a lot of people out of work, right? And so we're probably going to get another round of fiscal stimulus, but it's like, the sugar high that we're riding, either there's going to be more of it or it's going to wear off. And there's the fundamentals are going to either have to improve or the valuations are going to have to come down. And that's the ultimate. Right now, we're still in that a bit of a tug of war between those things.
Yeah, look, even if you are of the belief that stocks always go up, as some people are, I'm not going to mention any names, Davey Day Trader, but even if you do believe that, you recognize there are down days, right? And down weeks, and it's never a straight line, right? 1999 wasn't a straight line. It was close, but even there you had some selling, believe it or not. So yeah, and this may have just been one of these weeks, where things consolidated a little bit. Is there anything...
It's funny you mentioned the 1999. I think before the sell-off we see a little bit on Friday, the NASDAQ actually exceeded on a ratio between the NASDAQ and the S&P. It actually exceeded the levels of the dot-com era just wow. Friday morning. Uh-huh. So stocks may not always go up, but the NASDAQ seemingly does. So
Although from 2000 to 2007.
From 2000, right. It's a long way. It was a long slog to get there, but that ratio now.
Yeah, QQQ over SPY is like another, sort of back of the envelope, backhanded way people are looking at this market. Right? You want to buy the big cap tech stocks and the rest of the market. And those big five that Brad mentioned earlier, like they're now a huge part. I don't know what the latest number is, but it's over 25% of the S&P 500 are in those five stocks alone. And so they are the market in some ways.
There was a funny, we had a funny, it wasn't funny necessarily, it's a little worrying. We looked at some of these ETFs when we were looking at the big five. One of our editors, Kim Kahn, came out with an article earlier this week, and one of the value ETFs that we tried to look at and compare boasts those five names as its top five holdings. This is a value ETF. This is not a growth ETF, right? So I thought that was pretty staggering to see that even the value investors are allocating towards the big five, for lack of any other performance.
That's a good public service note that, when people think they're buying, know what you're buying. If you're buying it, an ETF or any kind of index fund, because you the name of it might not be what's actually in the, in the index or what the managers are buying. So, that's a little, I know it's an anecdotal thing, but it's a little scary. Right. If a value fund has those as its five biggest holdings.
And I'll hit everybody with a bit of real time news, which I just saw come across my screen is now the Florida governor has ordered bars to close in that state. That follows earlier this morning, Texas Governor Abbott ordered bars there to close. So, you know, if the reopening is going into reverse,
and we might see,
I don't see how it's not bad news for the stock
market. Yeah,
right, for everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the fear that you look at there. All right, this segment of the show, we talk about our favorite articles and stories, some of which we may have edited ourselves. There was no celebrity news this week, so
that, yes, there was.
Spoke too soon. I believe you spoke. Yes,
I did speak too soon. Take it, Bradley. Go ahead.
Oh, I mean, I don't want to steal anyone else's thunder if they were planning on going this route. You know, I was hoping to stay away from it again this week, but it's very, very challenging.
You can't fight the Fed. You can't fight celebrities.
You can't escape the Kardashians.
It's not even exactly just celebrities. It's just the Kardashian family. Gap this morning. Gapped higher with news that they are forming a partnership with Kanye West, who, as some of our listeners may know, is married to Kim Kardashian West. We know her from last week's reference to Spotify. Spotify is one of the biggest performers, up 60% since the beginning of May, not the March bottom, just since May. Goldman was out with a note on Thursday with a new street high target, citing reaccelerating growth there for Spotify. But Gap was the news on Friday. They had the biggest move in their history, up more than 40%. I think they're holding some of those gains on Friday. That being said, off of a low base, right, they are retail. They have been impacted by some of the COVID. They were trading about 45% below their pre-COVID levels before the Friday jump, and they are still about 20% or so off those levels. So, you know, still a long way to go. It's still trading around $13 a share. That's a far cry from $40 in 2015 that it was, you know, approaching. So there's your dose of celebrity news. I thought I could get by, you know, looking at Friday's, you know, our alpha talks here, but
you can't escape it.
Kanye swooped in at the last minute.
We should create a basket. You know, we should trade a Kardashian basket of stocks. You know, you got Cody with Kylie, Spotify, the Gap. I'm sure there are others, and look at their performance relative to the S&P 500. Like, we could create our own. That, you know, you have the barbell trade, you have the prepper trade on one hand, and you have the Kardashian trade on the other.
There's a work-from-home ETF that was just launched.
There you go.
There's all that, right, too. But, you know, one last non-celebrity news. I just, you know, sorry to get too in here, but I thought that our readers responded really well to it, and I thought that this is something that some of our other listeners might be cognizant or want to know about. Credit Suisse delisted a ton of ETNs. You know, these are notes that are, in this case, they were focused on gold, silver, and volatility. The TVIX was the most famous of these ETNs that was delisted by Credit Suisse in an announcement this week. It had over $1 billion in assets. It was one of the best performing ETNs of the year, up 200% before they did that. And I thought that was an extraordinary move, almost ironic in a sense that, you know, no one knows exactly why. Credit Suisse says it was a business strategy move. But, you know, these ETNs are a liability on the balance sheet. And as volatility moves, there's a lot of exposure both for investors. I think an investor even sued Credit Suisse recently over their outsized losses in one of the names that they were an issuer in. But there's a risk there on when these outsized volatilities that it could, you know, leave Credit Suisse holding bag. So a little bit of irony there. The TVIX actually is a levered ETN to the short-term VIX futures index, which, as we know, is our, you know, you're trying to hedge against that outsized volatility. And here you have Credit Suisse perhaps fearing volatility and then delisting the actual ETN used by traders to protect against it. So a bit of an ironic twist there. But I think a pretty fascinating story this week. And, you know, a lot of our readers were keen to get in on that. So
yeah, there's been a lot of research and literature lately on ETFs, and it just seems to be that a pretty dangerous place potentially. So just read the prospectus. Make sure you read the prospectus.
Absolutely.
All I can say. Stephen, favorite stories this week?
Didn't make too much news, but I thought important news with that is that Canada's credit rating was downgraded by Fitch. They've been a AAA rating for about 20 years or so, but their debt to GDP level has kind of exploded. Thanks to the pandemic and the response to the pandemic, they were sitting at a pretty healthy, like 88% and it's jumped to about 115%, and Fitch expects it to eventually go up to 120%. And it's you know, the canary in the coal mine. There's going to be probably other downgrades of other G10 countries. I would guess the U.S. GDP debt to GDP level is 103-105%, and that was before any of the pandemic, the slowdown in the economy and the rise in government spending thanks to the pandemic. So that must have exploded to 125% or more at this point. So expect to see more of these downgrades, and expect to see bond markets basically yawn through it because the central banks are kind of controlling what the yields are.
Yeah.
You saw some Twitter chatter on that too, Steve, did you not? You know, I think the jokes were flying fast and furious as Canada lost its third A, right?
That's good.
Right. Not my own. I wish it were mine. But
that's all right. You can pass it off. I do that all the time. All right. Aaron, what about your favorite stories?
Well, I know you're asking about stories on the site, but a couple of the things we haven't mentioned that, you know, we do want to highlight, you know, Nike today is down 6%+. Yeah. You know, really shocking quarterly loss, and the margins got hammered and inventories are up. So, yeah, that's you know, it's a rough outlook for them. They're closing stores, and that was also a theme this week. Apple closing more of its stores. And I believe I saw Microsoft said it's going to permanently close its retail outlets. So, you know, definitely, obviously COVID related there for Apple and Microsoft. But the, you know, Nike, that was ugly. And they're obviously a huge retailer. I get, you know, offset that with the Gap news. Who knows? Maybe that is putting additional pressure on Nike today, that, you know, that Kanye is still with Adidas.
Nike's heavily levered to sports, and with sports shut down, it hurts their marketing, and you know, there's this hope that sports are going to be ramping up. Major League Baseball says they're going to start in late July, and pro football still full speed ahead, and as is the NBA. And one wonders if the trickles that we saw this week, Texas this morning and Florida just minutes ago closing their bars, if, you know, this is going to lead to a rethink on pro sports coming back.
That would be a major fear for sure. It's interesting that Nike didn't get much of a bounce then from the Michael Jordan biopic that ran on ESPN, was it? And had everybody talking.
I did, Nathaniel, want to put out one story, because we've been talking a lot about, obviously, the Fed, and the Fed's got your back. Just as a contrarian, Trading Places Research had a story out this week entitled, "The Fed is Not Juicing the Stock Market," where they basically talk about that for as much as the Fed has expanded its balance sheet, that money is still either sitting in bank reserves or the U.S. Treasury account. And I'm looking for the quote here. Basically, the banks are hoarding the cash, not putting it to work. And he said, it's not so much, oh, my God, the Fed's buying everything. It's, oh, my God, 3 months into this, the banks are still scared to put their money to work. So, again, a little corollary to the, hey, the Fed is here and everything's going to be okay. Again, concerns about the financials. And, again, we talked about this with Daniel DiMartino Booth, that, you know, mortgage applications are up. You know, the new home sales were a blockbuster this week, but it's getting harder and harder to get an actual mortgage, right? And so, you know, if the Fed's goal is to increase credit creation, it's not looking like it's happening. And the banks are not dumb, right? They know that a lot of people are out of work, and there could be prospects for more layoffs coming. So that story, again, I thought was very interesting.
Yeah, and while we're on the topic of you know, black swans or things to look out for, my favorite article was by Rita Morwa, which actually published last Saturday, entitled "Retirement: A Storm Is Coming: The Inflation Monster." Actually, the second part in a series on inflation that he covers here. And he says he looks at four factors that will likely come together to create a perfect storm for inflation, which is something that nobody has really looked at in, what, 4 years? I mean, people have looked at it, but it's not really been a concern. Maybe, I guess, you could make a point in the very early 2000s. But and he says, is your portfolio ready? So I thought that was very interesting as in terms of, you know, like I said, things to look out for.
I'm curious if Rita in that piece talked about gold, which hit its highest level since 2012 this week.
Yeah, gold is rallying quite a bit. That's the obvious one, but it's I'm not sure if it's always worked out all that well. I guess it has over the long term, but who knows? Yeah, he doesn't look to talk to about gold all that much. It's more of just like what are the factors at play here? And
that's interesting because that's where the inflationistas always go to, right? That's, you know, indeed, the people who have been worried about it have been, you know, forecasting it wrongly for 20 plus years. Right. They always say you got to buy gold. Maybe, yeah. You know, maybe that moment is here. We'll see.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, for a quiet week, that was quite a bit for us to talk about. So with that, thank you all for listening or watching, and we look forward to speaking to you again next time.
That concludes today's Wall Street Breakfast. Thank you for listening. For the best investment analysis and news on the web, go to SeekingAlpha.com. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. You can sign up for our other podcasts, Behind the Idea, Essay for FAs, Let's Talk ETFs, the Cannabis Investing Podcast, and Marketplace Roundtable on those platforms as well. Have a great day.